This is Scott Becker with the Business of Pot podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Mark Pesakovich. Mark has become a leader in the cannabis industry. He's going to talk to us about his company, what he does, what's going on in the cannabis industry, whether stuff will continue to be in the legal market or which, and more. Mark, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Sure. Thank you for having me on, Scott. My name is Mark Pesakovich. I'm the managing partner of MBM Advantage, which is a small consulting company that provides sort of boutique services in the health and wellness space. A lot of our work is focused on cannabis. And we do regular lobbying, working with government officials. We also do sort of community outreach and relations, because in the cannabis world, there needs to be consensus and sort of a level of predictability and political support in order to make this industry viable. And a lot of that depends on the communities where these businesses reside. More recently, just because of all the relation, and you know, Scott, how relationships work, but having built up lots of relationships over time, I've just sort of organically gotten into business development, where I have, lots of clients who just want to meet other clients because they're a construction company or an insurance agency, and they want to work with all the people who I'm helping with applications for future cannabis licenses. So that's a lot of what we do.
Fantastic. Take a moment to tell us, what are three things people should know about the cannabis industry today? What are three things we should know?
Sure. Well, the first thing I think is, no, I don't bring samples with me when I go to meetings, because that's the most frequently asked question I have.
But, and are you still able to get meetings? Can you still get meetings without bringing cannabis with you?
Absolutely, although some of these entrepreneurs feel like they have their expectations dashed. Perhaps when it's legal to give it as a gift, I will start doing so. But realistically, Scott, I think the most important thing to keep in mind is, we talk about the cannabis industry. Yes, cannabis is the exciting word, but the reality is that industry is the more important word. And people sort of imbue this line of business with all sorts of excitement and, hijinks, and it's sort of naughty. But the reality is that it is a for-profit business, just like any other. And there are, by the way, lots of opportunities, no matter what you do in this world, no matter what your expertise is, whether it's growing plants or doing PR or accounting, there's room for you in this industry. So treat it like an industry. Don't treat it like smoking pot. The next thing I wanted people to know is a small tax provision called 280E. If you're not familiar with 280E and you want to get into the cannabis industry, you really should familiarize yourself, because what it basically means is that you're going to pay 80% of what you make in taxes. In federal taxes, and if you're in the state of Illinois, in Illinois taxes, because our 280E is linked to the federal. And so this is not a money printing endeavor, at least not until cannabis becomes federally legal. It is taxed in a way where you cannot write off your business expenses. So it doesn't matter what you spend on staffing or this or that, you pay taxes on your full, what you bring in, rather than minus what you spend. And so it is a daunting, it is a challenging field. And the last thing I want people to know is that getting these licenses is very, very, very complicated. Clients who can afford it have people like me help them. And even then, I tell people, look, if you're using money that you've been saving for your kids' college fund, you should not be in this business. It is an exciting and tumultuous time. There is hand-to-hand combat kind of competition for licenses. And the reality is that if you want to play in cannabis, there are lots of ancillary, non-plant-touching things you can do because, you know, this industry needs the full and complete supply chain. So I think those are sort of the main things that I like to tell people when I engage with a potential client.
Extremely helpful. Let me ask you this question. You know, there's reports in California, for example, that because of the tax situation, and it's probably the same in Illinois, that 80% plus of the market remains sort of in the underground market versus in this, you know, through the stores that we're starting to see pop up every place. What's your sense of that? Is that going to continue to be like that, where it'll be a huge percentage as long as taxes are this high that's done through the underground market?
Well, I sort of view it, Scott, as a progression similar to alcohol. You know, when Prohibition was repealed, there were still a lot of people, you know, whatever it is called, slinging gin under the bar. Slowly, you know, you don't see very many illegal speakeasies anymore. So I anticipate the same kind of transition in this space, but it will take a while. In Illinois, we have lots and lots of unmet demand. So we have relatively few dispensaries. We have maybe 60 in Illinois that are functioning, or 65 right now. Over time, the legislature provided for 500 dispensary licenses, but that's some time away. And we only have 21 cultivation facilities. So the prices are, at dispensaries are very high. They are made that much more expensive by the 30% in taxes people pay for adult use recreational cannabis. Medical patients don't pay that tax. And, you know, it's really, really tragic because there are medical cannabis patients who have gotten used to a particular product, a particular strain that really helps them with pain or helps them sleep or whatever. And then they go and they can't find it anymore because there are product shortages, inconsistencies, the prices are really high. So again, just like any other industry, right now there is more demand than supply. And so that essentially just protects the neighborhood dealer on the corner. You know, I mean, heck, if I can pay, you know, a third or half less for a product and I can make a call and somebody, you know, meets me down the street or comes to my house or whatever, it's really a lot easier than going to stand in line at the dispensary not knowing exactly.
Let me ask you a question about that. When the federal government at some point legalizes it, and it'll probably happen, quite frankly, you know, if there's a if the Democrats win the House, the Senate, the presidency, you know, and that's not partisan one or the other, it probably will happen pretty quickly if that's the case. Will that make this move a lot quicker, too, from an underground market to a above-ground market?
Absolutely. Again, just like Prohibition, once Prohibition ended, ultimately it became more profitable and better for business to be legal rather than illegal. And so that same thing will happen here, but it will be a period of transition. You know, again, there's still in the illicit market, there's still sometimes a lot more choice and lower prices and better quality. And so, but the point is, you hit it right on the nose. When the federal government makes it legal, when banking becomes fully, you know, fully available to the cannabis industry, when people walk into a dispensary and can actually use their credit card, which a lot of times now they can't, that will make a huge difference. That will bring prices down. That will, you know, improve production. You know, assuming that when the federal government legalizes it, they'll also won't tax it as if it's still criminal, I think that that's when the industry will really thrive. The other thing is, right now, in Illinois, you can only sell things that are grown and produced in Illinois, because obviously you can't bring anything across state lines. So each state is its own sort of protected, closed market, which really skews, you know, sort of the free market effects of a nationwide or worldwide industry. So you are absolutely right. Once the feds make it legal, which I hope will happen in the next 5 years or so, that will be sort of an inflection point for the industry, and it's going to get even bigger than it is now.
Right. And a lot of people don't realize that if you go to a dispensary today, you're paying all cash. And obviously all cash is they have ATMs every place. So it's not, I mean, I know this not from personal experience. No, I'm just kidding. But you know that if you go to a dispensary today, you have to use the ATM, get cash, pay with cash. And people are just not attuned to that anymore in our world, unless, of course, they're buying illicitly on the street, where I assume you pay in cash too. But in the long run, to build a real industry, you need the banking, fair taxes, all these kinds of things and stuff like that. So it's sort of a mess. But at some point, it seems like it will open up. That's just a natural progression of things. Fascinating. Mark, one more question. Do you sort of see this in well, let me ask you this question. Are you ever surprised that you ended up in this area, sort of doing this area of business and working in this area, or sort of like you grew up when you were five and said, I want to be in the pot industry someday?
Well, yes, I'm definitely surprised. Now, look, I am not kidding when I say I'm not just an advocate and a consultant and a lobbyist. I'm also a consumer. And so, when people ask me when I got into this line of work, I tell them when I was 14 years old. But the reality is that up until, relatively recently, I really lacked the imagination to think that the state of Illinois would legalize cannabis, and much less that would be, what I do for a living. It's sort of weird. I just joked to my daughter, I said when I worked in college, I was, worked at a hamburger place, so I really never ate hamburgers as long as I worked there. So I said, my current line of work is almost doing the same thing with cannabis, taking some of the fun out of it. But no, I never imagined that.
Let me ask you a question along those lines. It's and again, I don't really ask guests this very often, but is there a favorite strain or a favorite this or that that you prefer? Like people talk about the indica versus the sativa, relaxing versus not relaxing. Do you have a sense of what is it that you prefer? And do you like edibles or smoking?
I'm purely smoking. I don't do edibles. I know a lot of people who swear by edibles for some reason. They don't have the same kind of desired effect. And so I'm purely what we call a dry flower guy. I like to sample, and in fact I'm one of those people who will have 10 different jars at home with different strains. Sometimes they're used individually. A lot of times they're used in what I will call a salad. And so the preferences for product are just about as individual as every consumer.
And so the concept is you have 10 different strains at home. So somebody would originally think, oh, my God, that's a fun house to be in. But then you think, if you're in a normal house, in a non-pot house, most people have, they might have a brand of vodka. They got a brand of whiskey, they got a brand of tequila, they got their beer, they got their wine. And so it's not very different, really.
And that's, Scott, not even to mention, the medicine cabinet, right?
Right, exactly. We try not to think about the illegal or the legal prescription pharmaceuticals that our whole country is addicted to as well. Take a moment on this issue. People our age, and I don't know what age you are, I'm in my mid-50s, are often very scared of the edibles because you don't know exactly what you're getting, even though today it's all measured and stuff like that, and they tell you it's this, they tell you it's that, but it's almost like doing shots. It's too long until you know what's really hit you. So as an older person, you often avoid the edibles, avoid the shots, stuff like that, but I guess that's probably not universal. There's a lot of people that like the edibles more than the smoking. What's your sense of that?
Well, absolutely. According to stuff I've seen, Scott, and I'm not smart enough to have written down sources, but I've seen a lot of stuff that says that the fastest growing segment of the cannabis consumer population is people over 60. And so you do have a lot of people who are not just sort of pot smokers. This is new to them. And edibles, just like a capsule rather than smoking your medicine, makes sense to them. But you are absolutely right. Edibles are very unpredictable, even when the dosage is right. As I mentioned before, they just don't do for me what they might do for other people. And so what I always tell people, what we all in the industry tell people, when you're trying edibles, go low and slow. Low and slow. So if you have, you know, a gummy worm that has THC in it, don't eat the whole worm, much less the whole bag, because you're not going to have a good experience.
Go low and go slow. Yeah, do little pieces at a time, something like that. The other thing that you mentioned, you know, I'm 56, and you mentioned people in their 60s. And those people are so far away from me, so old, that I can't relate to people at that age level. Just kidding. Anyways, Mark, I want to thank you.
I just turned 50 during the pandemic, so there you go.
Right. We're like virtual kids compared to these people that are 60. It's exactly. Mark, it's a pleasure to visit with you. Just magnificent knowledge on the subject. Really a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Business of Pot podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me on, Scott.